Welcome to the Meat Company.
You're listening to From the Butcher's Block with hosts Jason Hendrick and Michael Buckley, broadcasting from the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California.
This is From the Butcher's Block here at the Ventura Meat Company. I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry. This is Michael Buckley from the Ventura Meat Company. He's owner-operator. And for this segment, we're going to talk a little bit about what Nick is doing on the Butcher's Block. Yeah, we're going to get in-depth about the cuts that he's got, how those cuts are going to be used, maybe some cooking opportunities with each of those cuts. So I'm going to largely turn this segment over to you, Michael, I'm going to be the student in this scenario, and you and Nick can be the teachers.
Well, it's good because, you know, you're not wearing one of these awesome microphones.
I had to relinquish my boom mic.
So
my headset.
The other microphone is being worn by Nick, so we can kind of get a little bit of insight. It's almost like the head coach talking to the quarterback on the field. You know how they have those in the helmet?
The helmet.
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I like that. All right.
Feel like a superstar now, Michael.
You have definitely come up in the leagues, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
This is new.
The subtlety with which you wield the knife has put you in the spotlight.
Tell them a little bit about this term you always use, denuding.
Denuding?
Yeah.
Well, it's...
what are we talking about when we talk about
denuding? It's removing the excess collagen and silver skin on the outside of the meat part.
That's right.
Which is delicious for, you know, making soups and stews and such like that, because it dissolves into deliciousness. But when you're going to be cooking something with dry heat with a short period of time with a high heat, what the collagen does is it shrinks up and it becomes really tough, and that's not really tasty. So by removing it, I'm turning this top blade, which is really good for stewing, into flat iron steaks, which are amazing for grilling. So
I'm really intrigued by the skill and the technique you're using right now too. It's almost a flicking of the blade, Nick. What does that allow you to do, or how does that allow you to work through that meat more efficiently?
Well, what I'm trying to do is just get the collagen. Don't want any of the flesh, because that's profit loss. All this pink on the outside, that's meat, which, you know, you do this remove it, but that doesn't really do much good because it's now separated from the actual big piece.
Yeah, it just basically becomes tartare at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you could chop
delicious
that up.
Delicious tartare.
I'll save that for later, else Michael will get mad at me.
Yes, I will.
Now, Michael, he has a pile of that collagen and silver skin that he's building, though. Will you end up utilizing that in the shop? Is that just waste?
It's going to mostly be waste. I mean, you know, we might try and get as much lean off as we can, but usually that's going to end up as waste.
Which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Now, what is that cut that you're working on right now, Nick? Where is that from
this
the chuck?
This is the flat iron. So if I'm not mistaken, it's from this.
It's still coming from that blade section we talked about in our previous segment.
And it's got a large vein running through it from up here, and it bisects the center of the muscle, and it makes it a normally tough cut of meat because it's got that large band of vein and collagen running through it. But when you remove it, it gets tender and delicious again. Now,
how will you market that, Michael, in the case, that particular piece that he's working on
flat
right
iron
now?
Steaks.
It is flat iron steaks still.
And that is becoming more and more popular, not only for people to cook at home, but even on, you know, restaurant menus. I think Danny at Anacapa has a flat iron steak on his menu. It's a very popular cut. It's very delicious. And the important thing is to...
Similar to tri-tip almost.
Cut out that. Similar. It's got some of the interwoven fat in there to kind of keep it from drying out. It didn't do a ton of work, even though it does rest in the shoulder. So it's able to be a really, like he said, a really good grilling steak. I mean, you could cut it into strips for stir fry or fajitas or whatever, and it's just a from that point it would be preference, but after he's done with this, it will definitely be merchandised as flat iron steaks.
Sure. And you look at that big piece of tendon and silver skin he's working on right now, you can see the fibrous structure of that piece of meat. And so, Nick, before you cut that off real quick, can you hold that so that you get a little glisten? You can see the parallel strands. I mean, that is tough. Like you mentioned, it's going to shrink up. That's not something you want to chew on in any capacity. Yeah.
It's fibrous.
It is.
But
very
it's also
fibrous.
Really good if you cook it in the oven. You can use it as like a little chew toy for your dogs,
Boom.
Which is great.
Interesting. All right. There's a creativity
coming
out again.
They'll get rid of it in a couple hours, but I mean, you could grab it from them, use it as a little ball throwing toy. Okay. And,
all right.
Outside. All
right. Outside, of course, yeah. Don't want to.
One of those outside toys. You don't want to find that under your couch in 2 weeks.
No, that's going to leave a smell and a stench.
I don't think it'll last 2 weeks, honestly.
Probably not.
No, they probably won't let it go. It's one of those where you have to, your best friend, companion, now becomes your.
That's what we need people to do. Stop buying, you know, plastic pet toys and just come over here and buy some Tendon for your dog. And
the
world will be a better place.
Yeah.
I almost started singing right there.
I'm not kidding.
This isn't a Disney movie.
This is true. It's not. Once you get that tendon off, I want to shift gears to another cut. This beautiful bulk of meat right in the front of the block is intriguing me, and I want to dig into that a little bit. Mike, we referenced that previously in another segment about the focus of roasts.
Yes.
And a roast, I mean, roast can be dry heat, but roast can also be used in a moist or a wet heat, in like a braising.
Yeah.
Do you have a recommendation for the listeners on which is going to yield a better product?
Better is not a word I would really use. I would use economical.
Okay.
I think the idea of a roast, the idea of a pot roast or something that's going into your slow cooker or your Dutch oven or something like that is an economical thing. And it's, if for no other reason, intended to be more than one meal. I mean, unless you've got 5 or 6 mouths to feed. But
which is not typically the norm these days.
It's typically not. But
family size,
you know, let's
is probably
say
2 to 3 people.
Let's say you do. Even so, use a, I don't want to use the word cheaper, but use a piece of meat like chuck or round or right, a more economical cut. You know, there's nothing stopping you from doing a nice top sirloin roast. And you know what? Maybe that's something that you could really do on the holidays or something. And I'm not opposed to doing it any other time, but it's not the most economical way to prepare a roast. And unfortunately, you know, we're very recipe-driven sort of consumership, and man, we know here when like the Wall Street Journal or something posts a recipe, I mean, it's like everybody and their brother comes in asking for this one specific cut of meat, and a lot of times it is a little bit of an indulgence, and these recipe recommendations, they fail to mention that.
Okay.
That it's, you know,
so people are focused too heavily on that kind of short-term usage and not a broader picture of how the ingredients can be leveraged.
That's exactly right. I think a chuck roast prepared properly can be just as enjoyable as just about any roast. I mean, be it a beef tenderloin roast, I think it really is just about application. It's about process. It's about making sure that you take the steps necessary to break down the muscle properly. And, you know, if liquid's needed, use the right type of liquid, use other ingredients.
And that throws us back to that beef broth that we've referenced in a couple of previous
Absolutely.
Segments. Now, Nick, before you truss that up and before you tie up the roast, can you show the viewers some of that muscle structure that we were looking at? Because I think that this is a great, for me, this is kind of a stereotypical great piece of lean.
So with a roast like this, you got that big thing of collagen in the middle, which is going to break down slowly as you cook it in the oven.
Slowly.
Or you braise it, like cut it into cubes. And I'm not really removing this collagen cap on the top as well, because that'll just melt over time. And it'll help keep the moistures inside of the meat, so it won't dry out as much in the oven.
And I notice you're kind of forming that. You're getting ready to tie it up, but you're forming it into a nice shape. What is that allowing? Or what?
It's just making it a more uniform shape.
Okay.
Because these Evenness. Pieces out here are going to cook faster than something, say, this right here. So if I wrap it under the meat, if I wrap it under it, it makes it more of a solid uniform shape.
Yep. Got it.
So there's not like
so the cooking pieces. Time, cooking temperature is more consistent.
That's right.
Yeah, and I prefer to cook these more at, you know, 325, 350 for a longer period of time. There's not really, you know, how long to cook it. You cook it until it's done. So you want, you know, 150, 155.
Now, he says cook it till it's done. I am a full advocate of cooking it till it's done. And that is a very generic, kind of vague terminology. But with a roast like this, you're not typically going to leave it too medium rare because of the toughness of the meat.
That's why he said 150.
Yeah. So you want to let that thing just slow, let that muscle fiber and those tissues break down and absorb those, you know, especially if you're using a great beef stock and some vegetables,
boom,
absorb some of those flavors as well. So, Nick, tell us about the technique you're using right now, because you're going to make this look like a photographic marvel with all this twine. I can tell already.
I'm going to try. I don't know if I'm going to make it a...
Do or do not. There is no try.
Hey,
easy, Yoda. Easy. But I notice you're wrapping the twine multiple times. You're not just doing a single kind of a shoestring knot.
Yeah, well, you want to be able to cinch it, so...
And you twirled that twine around itself probably a good 3 or 4 times.
I did it twice around the first time and then twice around the second time.
Okay.
And then, so that's going to leave it like that. And you're going to want to take it on your right-hand side. Well, at least that's the way I do it. And you wrap it once, twice, and then you slide it under.
Wow, we're going to, Curtis, we may in post-production have to look at doing a little slow-mo on that. That was pretty sweet. He did a once around his hand, twice around his hand, and it created a loop, essentially, that he was able to leverage on
that. It's this twine.
Is it that twine?
It's this twine.
So, rule number one, make sure you've got quality twine. But
let's try this again.
I think Smart and Final was out of the good stuff.
Too hard that time.
It gives us a good opportunity, though, to go back through that technique. It's the way you were able to spin that around and create the loop was pretty amazing. So,
practice
again, he's
makes perfect.
Yeah, he's the forming the roast into a nice uniform shape, brings the twine underneath the roast.
So the first time around, you don't really need to do it twice. I mean, you're just creating that basic
base
knot. Second time around, I'm going to do
once through.
And then twice through. Why? Because my teacher told me to.
Well, and it's a tested technique. You know, they're not going to teach you that in culinary school if it doesn't work and hasn't been used for years in the past. But so that's our first loop. That's our base that we're working from.
So you want to get that as tight as possible.
So you can't get your finger under it, right?
So you can't get your finger under it. And then you want to tie it off nicely like that.
All right.
And then there you go. You got your...
And you're not
knot.
Cutting that. I mean, you're maintaining that length of twine in its current fashion now for the next technique.
Exactly. I mean, you can cut it off. It's just time consuming.
Once.
And then once. Twice.
So that creates the loop.
Creates that cinch knot again. So I don't have to redo anything.
And this also creates that that vertical line of twine that you normally would see in the grocery stores.
That's right.
Well, when you buy a lamb roast, that's essentially what this is. That's the base.
They have the, what do they call those little contraptions, Nick? The net jetters or what have you?
Those the boots.
Yeah, right.
So this is the age-old method of doing that without modern technology.
You might use the word artisan.
Artisan? All right. I would use artisan. At your recommendation, we will use artisan.
Don't use crappy twine.
That's right.
Well, we're in our third loop at this point, so I think you have learned from the previous twine.
That's right.
Attempted the twine anyway.
Looking pretty good there, Nick.
Oh, well, thank you, sir.
How much
if it
think
rips
that
again, I'm going to cry.
How much do you think that thing weighs?
I don't know. 4 pounds, 4.5, 5. Mm.
Now, that's a good question, Michael, in terms of one... Again, going back to the consistent product, but also, too, in the cooking.
Yes.
How many, or not how many, do you try to showcase roast at the similar weight? And what does that mean to a person's cooking approach when they take it home?
We were just talking about that earlier before we even started the show. Nick and I were standing in front of the fridge and it just feels like we make these things a little too big sometimes, and the presentation becomes scientific to the point where you can't intimidate people. You know, I mean, we put pieces of meat out there that are so, you know, they're Flintstone-esque. I mean, they're just massive. And it from us, being behind the case and being, you know, on the block and everything, it's a fun thing for us to do. Like, hey, what do you think would happen if I just put this whole thing out there? Well, I can tell you what's probably going to happen. Nobody's going to buy it. So we need to be
brown.
Right. We need to be careful with how cavalier we get about, you know, making these big gnarly roasts and everything. So we were just talking about that earlier. I think what we need to communicate better is that, you know, this is something that can be cut down. As much as I would hate to, you know, bust up this awesome knot that he's making, you know, we got to make a sale, and that's more important than, you know, the cost of the twine.
I can appreciate that.
Sure. It's a piece of art.
Destroying.
Hey, trust me, I cried a tear when I had to do that once.
All right, well, as long as you felt bad for what you did, that's all that counts.
But then the customer paid for it, and I felt all better.
Oh, well, in that case.
Nick, though, earlier you mentioned cooking it till it's done.
Exactly.
So that 4 to 5 pound roast that you're netting up there right now, if we cook it at, you said, 150? Real low.
350.
350.
325 to 350 is normally okay. Good. Temperature.
How are you checking that? Are you using a thermometer?
You want to do a meat thermometer in the thickest part. So probably right about here is where you want to poke through.
Okay.
Something, or, you know, over here, you know. But you want to get it into the center because that's where, you know, the raw bits are if it's not done.
Are you a traditional seasoning when it comes to roast? Are you doing the rosemary and the thyme and olive oil, little crushed garlic? Or are you more exotic with your...
I'm doing whatever feels good at that time, you know.
What's the most unique ingredient you've rubbed on your roast?
Huh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I did like a sweet roast once. I did like orange and cinnamon and cloves once. With
that's
lemon
interesting
peel.
Because those are typically ingredients you'd find more with a pork roast. Where
yeah.
It's kind of not a beef roast, where the mineral, irony, flavor components are going to come out. And I would say battle to a certain degree with some of those citrusy, sweeter aspects.
Definitely.
The
well,
pork.
It was more, I got more of a burnt caramel.
Interesting.
Because I put the sugar on it, so it was dark, and it went really well with red wine, so I was told.
I like it. That's creative. I mean, you're
there's the full tied roast. It looks like this thing has a 8-pack, you know.
Very good. That's about 7 packs more than I've got on myself.
Amazing.
Seriously.
It's very nice. Good work there, Nick.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. Well done.
Hey, let me give this to my helper over here.
It's a behind the scenes. Exactly. We're taking the twine. That is a prime example of trying to use as much of the animal as possible.
Yep.
Again, as you said, it's either going to be roast or ground most typically. He trusts it up beautifully.
Yep.
The twine makes for a great presentation in the case. And we just got a very unique and exciting tip on how to season and glaze your beef roast that I would have saved typically for fowl or pork.
So let's sidetrack just a little here. Because I think something that has really surprised me about, you know, running this shop and how we staff it and everything, you know, I am by far the oldest employee here. These guys are all...
We won't divulge how much of a variance there
is. I'm 36 years old.
No, for Nick's sake. For Nick's sake, we're not going to divulge Nick's age.
We can. Absolutely. No, we should. What are you, 19?
20.
20 years old? You know, we have some exceptional young people working here, and I feel like, you know, you read magazines or, you know, see the cover of Time, and they had something about, you know, this generation is very, I don't know, they just expect, you know, they think they deserve, and a lot of negative thoughts about Nick's particular generation. We're finding out something very different. People just need... They need a carrot. You know, they need something in front of them to shoot for. And I have always found that being less dictative, do you think I taught him how to do that? No.
Well, it's fun, too.
I just gave him a butcher block and some meat. And you find out that it just takes a little bit of passion. You get them steered in the right direction. I'm excited about what people like Nick are capable of, and I'm glad to just be able to give him a vehicle for it.
Well, I think the point you just made is dead on. The steering in the right direction and a passion, because we roll in similar circles, and with the foodie community and entrepreneurialism, this really highlighting people's drive these days.
Yeah.
So we definitely, even if it's a smaller market than we realize, are seeing that convergence into a common theme. And that for me, that's following your passion and being an entrepreneur about what your skills can offer.
Yep.
So as you're seeing, Nick here is taking on a real path towards butchery. And I know we talked earlier in the before we got on the live broadcast about a goal of making your own charcuterie and raising pigs.
Amazing.
Even with, you know, when you're talking about the lack of drive and focus and people deserving and expecting and the younger generation just really thinking things should be handed to them.
Right.
My immediate first thought, and it's not necessarily a fair thought, but my immediate first thought was gamers.
Yeah. You know,
computers and technology and really debilitated and handicapped or hamstringed a lot of young individuals.
Yeah.
To counter that, though, I have a friend, my brother's friend and a mutual friend from back home, who's turning his passion and excitement about gaming into his own business. He's going to school about the design and the, you know, how to write a good story, because it's not just about creating the graphics. And so there are examples out there of the younger generation taking on what pushes their buttons. But it's the steering of the path, the guiding in the right direction that it takes a little bit of effort.
I mean, I think on a long enough timeline, the older generation would have to be to blame if the younger generation isn't inspired, you know, if they don't have a fire in their belly. And I think all of them do. And it's been really, really interesting, you know, running this shop and employing younger people and finding out that, you know, under the right circumstances, they will prosper.
Sure.
They really, really will. You'll see.
And we're seeing that right here. I mean, as you watch Nick work on this chuck, again, the care and the focus and the respect that he has for his craft really shines through. And hopefully more people that are running in his circles and in his generation will take that as an example.
It's not exclusive to food.
No.
It's not exclusive to video games. You know, whatever it is, gosh, just go for it. And it's something that I think, you know, as I get a little older, you know, I wish I would have been a little more ambitious. These kids smoke me, man. When I was Snake's age, are you kidding me? What a chump.
Well, for better or for worse, that's probably a great place to wrap up for the night.
Yes.
And although you may have said what a chump at that age, at this age, Michael, you're running the Ventura Meat Company. And we've got this awesome show, if I do say so myself, called From the Butcher's Block, where we're able to showcase individuals like Nick, cut some meat like what's on the block, and just some cool topics about food and the industry right now. Sriracha came into play tonight,
chili and
I may
smells.
Go eat, make a sandwich at home and drench it in sriracha tonight.
There are some ribs
in honor.
My oven.
And ribs?
And they're crawling, I mean, calling my name.
Well, I got lamb stew to look forward to at home, so.
Yes. Late dinner for me.
All that stuff means it's time to eat.
Yes.
We're going to wrap up tonight's episode and broadcast of From the Butcher's Block. Michael, it's been another great one.
Indeed.
We'll be back in a month. Thanks, everybody, for listening and paying attention. Nick, thanks for your care and your expertise. Appreciate
it. Yeah,
man. We'll see you guys at the next broadcast of From the Butcher's Block right here at the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California. Have a great night.
This has been From the Butcher's Block, broadcasting from the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California. You can find past shows at everybodyshungry.org/butchersblock and through iTunes. Follow us on social media through the hashtag Butcher's Block Show.